Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
It looks bad. And you know what? Nigel said yesterday, he says, they're in danger of becoming the Caps if they keep doing this. Well, now it's not just losing, you know, because I can make a justification for, Kershaw did this in the bullpen and all this. You look like you bumbled today.
You've spent a lot of time in Wrigley Field and in Byron's. Did you ever come down with mold poisoning and you weren't able to type, Richie?
Not able to type.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Strasburg lives. Strasburg is well. Strasburg was great. We are live at Chatter on the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Streets Northwest. We're open for breakfast every weekday starting at 7 in the morning. We have a nice crowd here. Thank you very much for showing up. Woo! I was in here last night and watched much of the Nats game against the Cubs. Gary Braun is with us. Chris Saliz is with us. Michael Kornheiser, who will go to Game 5 today, is with us. Nice. Nigel is running the board. Look, Boswell, who has been jamming me for a while now on Strasburg, he wins. Because Strasburg was great. Now, we don't know what happened. I don't think we're ever really going to know what happened. We don't know how much of this was gamesmanship. We don't know how much of it was real. What we know is virtually everybody who talked about this yesterday before Strasburg said he was going to pitch was condemning of Steven Strasburg, saying you got to want
putting
the ball.
Lightly.
Yeah, I mean everyone but Boswell. Boswell was loving him up and looks good. Boswell looks good today. Boswell, I'm one of Strasburg's biggest critics, so I wasn't close to some of the former Major League Baseball players
Ross
out there.
Eviscerated.
I wasn't even close to that. But here's what Bos writes today. Ever since his early years when he had injuries both serious and mysterious, as well as the famous Strasburg shutdown to protect his arm in 2012, those who comment on baseball have been forced to take a Strasburg position. Injury-prone, diva, hothouse flower. Unfortunately, this is a great sentence. Few psychological influences are more powerful than confirmation bias. I have to say, it's the first time I've heard of this phrase. Once we take a public position, we unconsciously distort all future data so that it confirms what we already believe, which means Boswell is softer on Strasburg and I am harder on Strasburg than is reasonable. And he writes, perhaps nobody in baseball has suffered more or more unfairly, in taking his position, in recent years from confirmation bias than Strasburg. And he goes on to explain this, and it's fine. Here's what you have. If you have Steven Strasburg now, you win. If they win, he's the MVP of the series. He had two great pitching performances. Coming out of some sort of sick situation. How many IV bags? I don't know. How much Chicago mold? I don't know. I will tell you that when Dusty
How
Baker...
How much being pushed to play versus wanting
know.
To play?
They say right. the official line is nobody went to Strasburg and said a word. No teammates, nobody in management, nobody in upper management. Wilbon was crazed yesterday when Dusty Baker talked about Chicago mold, and Wilbon said, I have never wanted to beat someone into the ground as much as I want to beat Strasburg into the ground. I hate
Dusty,
Strasburg.
You mean.
No, Strasburg. He transferred it.
Okay.
He transferred it to Strasburg. Strasburg went out there yesterday to force a game five. He had 7 innings, gave up 3 hits, nothing.
Broke his 4-day old franchise record.
He was totally,
in the game.
Totally dominant.
If you want to take the position that this was a referendum on the rest of his career, he looks great right now.
And
he looks great. And the Nats, maybe 1-0 would have been enough. It was enough for Strasburg, and it was unearned for the Cubs. Unearned. Shortstop made an error. They could still be playing. And nobody thought any home runs were going to be hit because if you were watching the beginning of the game, in the first couple of innings, balls were crushed, and they went to the warning track. They didn't go to the Ivy.
Right.
And Wilbon, who knows that stadium, said to me unequivocally, there will be no home runs. Which
I'm
is
not sure that home run makes the
exactly
Ivy.
Exactly what I thought.
Without the basket, that might just be a long fly
did
out.
You,
too.
Did
and
you
Michael
see...
A. Taylor, and by the way, the eighth inning's been very good to the Nats. That's their inning, the two wins.
Did you see the when they replayed the trajectory of the Michael A. shot from the side? It's going up. You can kind of see it. It's in the wind.
And then
it's
like a wedge.
It literally gets to where that basket is, and it immediately drops straight down.
Straight down.
Like the wind just I mean, it
like
probably,
you're hitting a soft wedge.
Right. It couldn't have gone 5 feet further.
And it looked like there was going to be a play for the right fielder, and you're just hoping for an error off of the wall because that happens at Wrigley.
Yeah. Well, so, he's going back like he thinks he might be able to get it, and he kind of slips at the last second.
It was in the air for 10 seconds.
A completely bizarre way to load the bases. On a whole bunch of walks, a pickoff. John Lester was...
He can't throw the ball at first.
Cannot throw it. Picked off Ryan Zimmerman. And did on the review. Right. I mean, you can see that. And then more relievers and more... Their bullpen... Lester's not a reliever. Their bullpen is worse than our bullpen.
Well,
you can't have much faith in Edwards now. It's interesting because in game three, he was the guy huffing and puffing off the field. Look at me now. And he puts him in that position.
Now, Edwards.
And you just think, Wade Davis, that's the last person you ever expect to give up a grand slam.
Yeah. And bring him in with a 1-0 count, which is cool. You don't see that much where you know, you figure they just said to Edwards, okay,
give Madden credit.
Throw the first strike. And it was a ball, and they just said, okay, he can't
even throw a strike. You never... see that.
Yeah.
I mean, Madden just is like, no, that's it. Like we have so little trust in you, we're not going to let you throw any more pitches.
By the way, it's been very, very exciting. Four very tense, very wonderful games.
Great series.
Neither team hits. Both teams pitch, apparently, because neither team hits. The Nats got 5 hits last night. That's all they got. I mean, now, Rendon had a hit, and Murphy had a hit.
Do you know who didn't have a hit?
Harper did not have a hit. Turner had a hit.
I know.
Harper and Worth didn't have any hits.
Zimmerman didn't.
Worth. Bases loaded. Strikeout 3, looking.
Strikeout looking twice in a row. Michael and I had a little bit of
there are some of us who wonder in Game 5 if Kendrick and maybe Adam Lind should be playing.
Oh, yeah, they should be, but they won't.
Oh, you don't think
Kendrick? 100% chance.
Is that right?
Jason Worth.
So there
is dusty. I think that's 50.
There's a Game 5. There's a Game 5 which we're all thrilled about. But
can I just
could
point
be the most
out?
Crushing defeat do, in Nats history.
Do you know it's a little before 8:30 as we record this on Thursday morning? You know who's starting today for the Nats?
I do not
exactly because they haven't announced it.
I knew Tanner Roark went last night.
So
I was sure
why,
of that.
Again, we talked about this yesterday. Why 28 hours or whatever it is ahead of time? Do you have to announce he's not pitching?
You don't.
I mean, why could you have not just said? You know, Stevens does under it, the weather. We'll see how he feels.
Does it not look to you like they were trying to shame him into pitching?
Yes. Dusty was clearly extremely annoyed in the press conference in which he announces that he's sick. Mold or something.
You know what I thought? He's clearly annoyed.
Was that the master plan? Because it had the correct effect.
It reminded me of Bill Parcells going on Terry Glenn. I mean, it was like completely masculine. And just all sort of the confusing misspeaking. And then Rizzo comes out later and says he was on IVs, he had a fever, he had the chills, he's very sick.
But they gave him stronger antibiotics. Stronger antibiotics, and he suddenly got clear. You know what it reminds me of? Every conversation I have about something Donald Trump does, which is... Do you think he did this on purpose? Is this all some sort of massive strategy?
What do you think about this?
I'm convinced, no matter what they say, that Scherzer went to Strasburg or Strasburg's agent went to Strasburg and said, if they lose game four, they will boo you.
Yes.
You will go down in history as that guy. They will have to trade you. So if you like living here, and you like not being booed in your home starts. I mean, imagine if he didn't pitch yesterday and the Nats lose.
What if he actually felt better? The guy I saw on the mound yesterday for seven innings looked confident.
He didn't pitch like he didn't want to be there. Yeah.
He looked like he wanted everything. And that even goes to his batting. I mean, he laid down a perfect bunt. He was not rattled. If you looked at the way he attacked Brian and Rizzo, you're never going to see a dominant pitcher go after those two guys better. He stuck with the pitch, the changeup, which was not with him in the first inning, and he ended up getting, I think, 8 out of his 12 strikeouts with that changeup, swing and miss stuff. So I saw a different guy.
And totally. That changeup, by the way, so officially, statistically, 106 pitches, 72 strikes. If you just sat there with the pitch track and no batter, he didn't throw 45 strikes. I mean, those changeups were literally unhittable. I mean, they were bouncing in the dirt behind the plate.
He threw it in, to Michael's point, too, he threw it in huge spots.
Yeah.
3-2 to Rizzo in the 3-2
You
had hitters, right,
and it was nasty, and it was cold.
You had professional
master and
hitters,
commander.
Good hitters.
No, he was.
He was amazing.
He changed
his whole storyline, literally.
With the short sleeve shirt, with the back flapping in the wind.
One game, you watched that guy go from can't believe he's so fragile to I cannot believe he's out there doing this.
This is the first game he ever pitched where you said, I mean, the curse of Steven Strasburg is the first game he ever pitched where he went, wow, this guy is great. And then there was a series of hesitations, a series of disappointments, and you got to the point where people like me, and I'm not alone, doubted him. Not his ability, doubted his zeal, doubted his desire to get out there. He was spectacular.
And the apex of that doubt was 24 hours ago.
The cherry on the sundae was when I texted everyone and said, before we knew, and it was he wasn't playing. And then suddenly he is. And I mean, that was it. Right. It was the example of this guy is an orchid. It 100% affirmed everything we thought about
him. And he goes out, he's great. And then, and what I appreciated was at the end, he was still contemptuous of the media, which he always was.
Rightfully
and he said,
so.
I didn't do anything for you guys. I don't have anything to prove to you people.
Right. We are the worst.
You know, so good. So good. He was great.
They've now had
three great pitching performances in four games.
And it doesn't matter.
And so why am I terrified of game five?
And I was going to say, and none of it matters.
And believe
because
we
if they
won,
lose today,
the
it's
Nats, the Nats won one of those three dominant pitching performances.
You know, DC won last night because the best single shot, the long view of all those Cubby fans walking out onto the
down
street.
That was so great.
So what?
How about the fans showing up with the like SARS masks on with the surgical mask?
That's a good bit.
That was tremendous.
What do we think happens tonight? It's going to be sort of spitty out tonight. It's going to be
and we assume,
chilly.
We assume Gio.
Well, here's what I assume, that if they have to close the game with Max Scherzer, they will.
Yeah.
Everybody's in.
I want to see our new beast Strauss get out there and notch one tonight.
Zero days rest.
I wouldn't be surprised if they went.
The Nats are going against the guy that owned them in game one.
Well, listen, 24 hours ago they said they were pitching the guy who they thought gave them the best chance to win, and that's when they were saying they were pitching Tanner Roark. I would not be surprised to see them start him with the understanding, however short the leash is.
Think they'd start Roark and not Gio?
I'm just saying.
No, for matchups, it could be better.
They could 1-2 it.
For matchups, it could be better. You start Tanner Roark. They load up with their lefties because they have a ton of lefty power.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, you bring in the hook with Gio, who can try and get those four, five, six innings. But Gio doesn't come in the bullpen.
Yeah. That's what
Tanner has experience with that.
Exactly right, Michael.
So, are we nervous?
Some combination of
that. Of course I'm nervous. This is a DC elimination game.
Right.
I have a terrible track record of going to these.
I actually wouldn't say nervous. I would say resigned. I'm more resigned than nervous. I'm ready for it.
The Nats have not made it to no DC team has made it to a Final Four of any sporting contest since 1998.
Well, this has been, you'd have to say
11 years.
I guess the Cubs feel the same way because they got the Rizzo hit. You know, and they got the Rizzo home run and the games that they won.
It's been a great series.
But the drama of the two games that the Nats have won, it's been a great series. It's been the best series.
If you love America, you're rooting for the Nats. I don't know how else to put it.
Here is very simple. The sad fact is, should the Nats lose,
the
it would be so sad to have wasted what I immediately dubbed the swing, which was the Bryce Harper home run in game two, and both the Strasburg starts, but yesterday in particular, both of those things are just lost. They're just footnotes, and they're the Worth homer.
But
they don't matter.
Scherzer had a no-hitter for 6 1/3.
Right. Right.
He didn't win.
Yeah, good point.
He didn't win. Yep. All right. Will you be there tonight, Gary?
Negative.
Chris, will you be there?
I have to do an advertising dog and pony for CNN this evening.
I mean, I'm willing.
Nigel,
I'm willing to go.
Well, it's all hands on deck, you know. So
you'll be there.
No, I won't.
Michael, you'll be there.
Yeah, I'm willing to bat second.
Yeah. Okay.
Better than Worth.
You got to get Worth on it. Yeah. At least turn
it off.
Can we just do an empty and just count it as an out?
Wouldn't it be great
if
they said to Worth before the game, "We've got a special job for you. We want you to go out and get some food for us. So just go out and get that."
So what if Worth
come to the
got
game?
What if Worth gets the game winning hit?
Well, then yeah.
Well, we'll be wrong again. What else is new?
All right. Okay. So we'll take a break. We will come back. Ann Hornaday will join us when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And this is a SeatGeek ad because we just talked about sports. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated. There's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps of your phone. And SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices. They're going to be pricey tonight, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for great value. I shouldn't do this here because this is the commercial, and sometimes people skip the commercials. Do they listen to the commercials?
What do you mean?
No. Chatter will be showing this game tonight.
Yes.
All right, come to Chatter and watch this game tonight.
Well, is Mr. Tony at the game?
Mr. Tony's not at the game. Way too late for Mr. Tony.
Oh, too late.
SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, listeners to this high-quality pod get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase, as Chris Saliza found a few weeks ago. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first
Tony,
SeatGeek
currently
purchase.
$77 gets you in on SeatGeek.
Okay.
Yeah, not bad.
No, that's not bad at all.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Jeff Page, who writes, "My name is Jeff. I'm a loyal Southern California little. I play drums for Leslie Pereira and the Lazy Heroes, an indie rock band from Los Angeles. We would like you to hear some of our music from our debut CD, Fight For Now. It's available on cdbaby.com, Amazon, iTunes, and streaming on Spotify and SoundCloud. Hope you like it. We would be honored to hear a song on your show. It's not that hard to do. Send it in."
Yeah, that's
We're pretty
how it
good
works.
About that. That's playing in Ann Hornaday. Ann Hornaday, who does a podcast from these very studios on a weekly basis called At the Movies with Arch and Ann. And I haven't seen a single movie in about 7 or 8 months, so I'm going to ask you about some movies that you've seen. And then, of course, I'm going to ask you about Harvey Weinstein, because I don't know how we can avoid that. So let's start with Blade Runner, which is a redo of a fabulous science fiction movie, which has to be 30, 35 years ago at this point. And, I mean, I don't know whether to believe what is quoted on television, but everybody, the ads that they run indicate that it's spectacular. It's not my kind of movie. Is it your kind of movie?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's visually stunning. It's that same kind of moody, atmospheric. You know, it was really about the mood and the atmosphere and the tone of the first one. It wasn't necessarily the plot, you know what I mean?
It was
not like,
plot.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it's stunning. I mean, there are images in this movie that are utterly ravaging, you know, just astonishing and beautiful. But again, it's in the service of a very lightweight storyline, and it goes on way too long. I mean, it's like 2 hours, 40 plus minutes. Right?
Yes.
If I'm going to do I'm going to watch The Nats.
And The Pace of a Glacier.
So you said yes and no. What do you mean by yes? Did you mean Ryan Gosling's in it?
Yes, and he's gorgeous. And, and, you know, frankly, Harrison Ford is wonderful. I mean, Harrison Ford is creating this career of going back into the movies that he made in
Star
the
70s Wars.
And 80s
yeah.
as the crusty old man, and he's doing beautifully. I mean, it's really kind of working out great for him. I mean, he's always the high point of everything he's in now. And so, you know, it was like I said, I mean, I can't say that I didn't enjoy watching it, but I really did. I did feel like it was way too long. That's my main complaint about it.
We're getting rid of that. We'll talk about Marshall, which is apparently a biography of Thurgood Marshall with Chadwick Boseman and Kate Hudson. And Chadwick Boseman, who went to school locally, he went to Howard, played James Brown, Jackie Robinson, and Thurgood Marshall. This is pretty good. If you're going to play people, that's pretty good. So
he's our Paul Mooney. Nobody remembers Paul Mooney, but remember he was the biopic guy.
Yes, yes. So is it any good?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very. This is about a pivotal case in Thurgood Marshall's career, a case that he tried in Connecticut, where he was not admitted to the bar. He was not actually allowed to really try the case. So he needed to kind of ally himself with a lawyer up there who could argue, and that is an insurance attorney named Sam Friedman, who's played by Josh Gad.
Yep.
Anyway, this is a very conventional historical look at an episode. I didn't think it was the most exciting piece of cinema I've seen all year, you know. Bozeman is always good. I wanted something a little bit more dynamic, frankly. It really made me appreciate. We didn't really talk that much about Loving last year, the movie about the Loving.
I know you
story.
Liked it very much. You said it was slow, but you said you liked it a lot.
Right, and I think what this movie made me appreciate that all the more, which is the lens that the filmmaker put on it. Which it, you know, like this is a very conventional, like episodic. Here's what happened movie. And Loving is a much, like, didn't do that and kind of drilled down into a different area of their lives. And it was much more intimate and kind of risky, you know, in terms of the focus of the film. And I wish this had taken a few more risks just narratively. But I'm still waiting for that, you know. There was this great one-man show about Marshall that was on, that opened
Your
up a Kennedy
Center
a few
years ago. Your phone is terrible. Your phone is terrible. It's cracking.
Is it?
And that's your landline, too. It's just
I know,
awful.
That shouldn't be happening.
All right. So we're moving on from this movie. There's something called Goodbye, Christopher Robin. I don't know. I mean, I can't say to someone, hey, let's go see Goodbye, Christopher Robin.
But the cat, I'm never gonna see you in this movie.
No.
I'm not gonna put you in this movie.
It
right?
looks like a great
like,
cast.
It's like a car
though.
Salesman. What am I gonna put you in today, Tony?
Yeah,
you know, no, I'm not gonna put you in this movie. It's again a very, very conventional biopic about A.A. Milne and how he came to write Winnie the Pooh. It's an incredibly sad movie, let me just say. Very sad movie about the family life and his real life son, whose name was Christopher Robin, and their relationship and the writing of the book and the effect of the book on their family and on Christopher Robin. Very sad. I was surprised, but yeah, you kind of walk out. I mean, I don't want to give anything away. I'm not going to say it's tragic.
Right.
But it's very sad. Very sad movie. Very
well, who
sad
wants
story.
To sign up
Hashtag
for that?
Sad.
Yeah, who wants to sign up
you know
for
what?
Sad movie?
I don't know. And when I went to the screening the other night, people thinking it's a Winnie the Pooh origin story, you know, bring their little kids who are literally bawling their eyes out because it's so sad. And this is not a children. I wouldn't call this a children's movie at all. I mean, it's perfectly appropriate for kids, but I can't imagine who would want to. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who goes to see this one.
Okay, and the other one, I briefly wanted to touch on is the new Tom Cruise movie, American Made, because so liked. The movie he was in with Cameron Diaz a few years ago.
I know
it
you
It seems
did.
To be the same kind of character here. So is this any good?
Yes, I actually did think this was good. It's from Doug Liman, who directed him in the movie I can't stop talking about, which is Edge of Tomorrow, the science fiction
yes,
movie.
Yes, yes.
Which was so underseen and underappreciated when it came out. And I think he, once again, it's a really good performance from Cruise. He plays a real-life guy, a pilot who was convinced to help the CIA during the whole Iran, you know, it was in the lead-up to Iran-Contra, so it was helping the Contras, running guns, running drugs. It's this very sleazy underbelly kind of life, but this movie tells it with a lot of humor and it's kind of swashbuckling action, and of course he does all his stunts and does all his flying and all of that. So I mean, I think it's one of those roles where you're looking at Tom Cruise saying, okay, you're going to need to make your pivot really soon. You know, you're not that guy anymore, and you need to figure that out. But for now, I think you know it worked with this one.
He's so much better smiling than he is serious at this point.
I
so
think
much
right.
better
yeah.
smiling.
Yeah.
So okay, good. All right, let's get to Harvey Weinstein. This is every day there's 5 or 10 more people who say that Harvey Weinstein was involved with them in something, you know, sort of sleazy.
I know.
I keep hearing, oh, this was an open secret. I don't want to hear that because there are reporters who are supposed to cover that industry. Like, I don't want to hear in baseball after a season, everybody knew he had a broken leg. I don't want to hear that. So tell me what this is and who knew and why did it take so long? Because at least with the Bill Cosby thing, there were some contemporaneous accusations that I remember. So what is this?
Well, I take issue with open secret. number one, there were reporters that were trying to run it down. David Carr tried to run it down. Kim Masters tried to run it down. Sharon Waxman tried to run it down. I mean, so the hard part, I think, for them was getting people to go on the record. I think at the last minute, people would pull, you know, people would be ready to go.
Right.
And then somebody would get cold feet and pull out. I mean, what the pattern was, if somebody complained, they would get a financial settlement and they'd have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And that is the thing that kind of muzzled people who could have been credible sources. So I think that didn't help. He had an incredibly powerful network of protectors in terms of publicists and lawyers, and they went into overdrive. But, you know, I am grappling with the fact that I did not know about this. And it's like, gee, this is the world I'm supposed to... I don't cover it like a reporter covers it, but, I mean, I should be in the know. And I've been kind of talking to colleagues about this, like, did you know? And a lot of people didn't. You know, I mean, so to say everybody knew, I think that's an overstatement. But I still think people are feeling really, like, I know I'm really emotionally affected by it, because I feel naive and like I was not seeing something or not hearing something correctly, and it's like, wow, it's really breathtaking. I mean, it's absolutely devastating to hear these stories.
Do you know him?
No, I've never met him. I never interviewed him.
Right.
I met him, like, literally I met him. The one and only time I met the man was at Cannes, and I was having a working coffee with Christopher Dodd, who's the outgoing head of the MPAA. And we were leaving, and Chris said, here comes Harvey. He was walking, you know, he was getting out of his car, and we met literally across a parking lot. And that was the alpha and omega of that. And so, no, I've never been in the man's presence.
So now he is, let's put this aside for a second, though it's hard to do that, but just for the second. He's a producer of great movies, right?
I mean, correct.
Nobody would attack his work. They would only praise his work, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so this whole notion that when I was young was called the casting couch, all of this, does this happen a lot? Is he the only one? Obviously, the excesses of this are stunning.
Yeah.
But is this common?
That's the question. I mean, I think now there have got to be people in that business who are scared. Because I do think that this, between Cosby and O'Reilly and Ailes and now this...
Yes.
I think we have reached a tipping point. And women are no longer willing to stay silent. And so you got to believe that there are going to be people in that community who are wondering if they might be next. Now, again, I don't know who they, you know, I don't know who they are.
Right.
Because I don't live out there and I'm not in that, you know, like I'm just not in, as a critic, I'm really usually not in a position to be hearing these stories. If anything, I'm trying to keep myself from at arm's length from people. But, by no means is he might be a particularly pathological expression of this impulse,
yes.
But by no means is he the person, you know, I think it is structural.
It was amazing to me in the first round of denials, he denied some of the things. I mean, you know, he denied some of the things, which meant, in my mind, that however many were out there, 90% of them were real. Does he have a future? I mean, we were talking about this off air the other day, and what I said was, the guy's track record as a producer is so good that I would think now that there are some people who would come to him who could never have gotten in the door before, and would want to work with him if he could do something just because of his work, not his personality.
Yes, although I will say, when people ask why now, I do think part of it is that he has been diminished recently. I mean, his track record is by no means as strong now as it was, you know, 5 or 10 years ago.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's been a little bit on the wane. You know, I mean, he doesn't have the winning streak he once did. And frankly, look, the landscape has changed. He's got Netflix and Amazon competing with him for talent, the kind of talent that he used to cultivate and be known as safe harbor for. They can go elsewhere now. And little upstarts like A24, you know, the company A24, they took the Oscar last year for Moonlight. You know, they're brilliant at marketing. They are brilliant in that space. So he's by no means, you know, he's no longer the big kahuna in the indie film space. And he's not the big kahuna necessarily in the awards space that he was. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't see him coming back from this.
He's not the Annie Kahuna anymore. Big, little, he's done, then you're saying. You think he's done.
I believe he is. Okay. I cannot really put him in a scenario where he's coming back.
Okay.
But then again, what do I, like, with Stranger Things? I mean, you know from the sports world, right? Like, people do come back.
Yes. They do, but the sports world is more forgiving, I think, than some. This is reprehensible.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is just so revolting.
Yeah,
revolting is the word.
This is really.
Yeah, you just feel a physical revulsion, and I just think he would. I don't think anybody would want to even be next to him at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Ann. Ann's podcast, which is done weekly, is called At the Movies with Arch Campbell, Ann Hornaday, and it's done in this space at Chatter. Thanks, Ann.
Bye.
Ann Hornaday, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news. Nigel will do news when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron ad, and it asks you to talk about your personal experience with Blue Apron. Michael has seen me cook with Blue Apron. What would you say my personal experience is when I cook and chop and do all those things?
You're like a kid with a new toy.
I like it.
You're totally engaged. You're operating 2 to 3 pots at the same time. You're chopping, you're dicing.
Yeah, I haven't
done
it.
Trying new flavors.
I haven't done it 6 or 7 months.
Like,
I'll do it again.
You're like an elementary school kid.
You have a rock and a saute?
Yeah, it's really good.
But you genuinely enjoy it.
I do.
Yes.
I do. It's affordable. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. It's flexible so you can customize your recipes each week based upon your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options. You can choose what fits your need. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less, but you need more than 2 hands. I mean, you got to have 2 people doing this, 4 hands. Guaranteed. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they will make it right. Check out this week's menu. You can get $30 off your first meal with free shipping if you go to blueapron.com/TonyK. You will love how good it feels and tastes and create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. That's Blue Apron, BLUEAPRON, blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from John Elderkin. I'm a former prof at The American University, where David Aldridge remains revered. A long time little. Since moving to North Carolina, I've sent you music a few times. And now I'm writing songs for Mad Crush, a band comprised of one part June Carter sassing Johnny Cash along with 2 dashes of Yitzhak Perlman taking a hayride. It's funny. Mad Crush sings about fussing, fighting, and sometimes making up. This number, Northern Lights, features the remarkable vocals of Joanna Satin and the violin of Laura Thomas, together a pair of true knockout artists. This and other songs can be found on our Bandcamp site. This is lovely.
Is it nice?
Michael, when people send us music, if they want to get it through easily, how do they do it?
They can send it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Is there a more difficult route? Since he said if they want to do it easily,
yeah.
They would go.
Remember that at the end of the podcast, you can hear the music in its entirety, and it's always lovely music. Before we get to the news, there's a couple of things. One is Jonathan Jean-Baptiste is marrying Amber Robinson at Woodlawn Manor tomorrow, Friday the 13th.
Nice.
Jonathan came in here. All congratulations to Jonathan.
That's where my wedding reception was.
That's up in my neck of the woods.
Is that right?
Yeah, my wedding reception was at Woodlawn Plantation.
So there you go.
It was wonderful. It was a day like today.
Well, it's no longer called Woodlawn Plantation.
Yeah, Woodlawn Manor. Yours probably was at the plantation.
Woodlawn Manor. I think it was called Woodlawn Plantation when I did it.
That's a good thing you remember your wedding day.
We're not using that word much anymore.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
People are getting away from that word.
That's so interesting.
And from Dina in Damascus, who wrote this yesterday, I cheered for the Giants until Parcells went to Dallas, then that blew up. I cheer for the Steelers, the person to whom I'm related by marriage's team. I cringe when the Caps lose. But never before have I realized what being a sports fan is really like. I can't even watch Nats games. Their 10th anniversary poster hangs in my office taunting me. I worry because of the rain delay, and I worried when I thought there wasn't going to be then. One, why, was it this show that made me a Nats fan? Was it knowing about the seats that DA and Torrey share? Or was it the Nats game my dad and I went to 2 years ago, just 2 of us for Father's Day? I think it was the latter, but I now know what it's like to be a sports fan. Life was easier before. That was a tough one last night, but after the home run.
Yeah.
I will say that if you're Madsen and if you are Doolittle, it's a lot easier at 5-0 than 1-0. It's a lot easier.
I did not want to see anyone other than Strasburg on that mound with a 1-0 lead.
I was calling for Solis. You had to take him out.
Oh, yeah. No, I knew that you had to do that move. I was not looking forward to it.
He was done. Because, you know, you have to have strength to fight the mold.
You do.
Yeah.
You have to have strength to fight the mold. What have you got for news?
Just
a few days ago, it seemed like the Yankees were going to get swept and that Joe Girardi might be on his way out of New York.
He still might be. He may leave, but...
Right. But it looked like he might be asked to leave.
He's not being fired.
No.
Well, he's leaving New York, but it'll be to play Houston.
Yeah, the Yankees complete the comeback last night after being down 2-0. They beat the Indians last
night. Shades of the Boston Red Sox versus the Yankees in 2004.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. The Yankees went 5-2. They will advance to play Houston in the AL Championship Series starting Friday night at Minute Maid Park. Didi Gregorius had a couple home runs, so it was and CeCe Sabathia was just magnificent.
Well, let's look at this game a little more closely. Because CeCe Sabathia went back to Cleveland where he started, and almost everybody, if you remember the Washington Post about a week ago before the playoffs started, almost everybody at the paper picked Cleveland to win the World Series. Certainly they picked them to win either over Minnesota or the Yankees. And I would have too. And you'll remember on this show, Tim Kirkjian said, because I said, why are they starting Trevor Bauer in game one? Drone man, why are they doing that?
Bauer.
And he said that Terry Francona was already planning his pitching to get to the World Series. He plotted it out. Perhaps a case of hubris, which is what I suggested yesterday on PTI.
That's why I keep my Pulitzer Prize speech in my pocket at all times.
Right.
You never know.
Yeah. CeCe Sabathia was okay. He didn't even last five. And the Yankees went out, and they brought in David Robertson and Aroldis Chapman. Aroldis Chapman, who doesn't like to go more than one, went two. And the two of them, in 4 2/3 innings, had no hits and 6 strikeouts. That's a bullpen. That's a bullpen right there. You have no fear when you put them in. The Yankees are... Corey Kluber wasn't good in either start.
No.
And he got tagged in this one, and he was out early. And they're on the sidelines now, and the Yankees play Houston. And, I mean, I think Houston should be the overwhelming favorite, but I said that about the Indians. Yeah. I said that about the Indians.
I don't understand... Well, I mean, I understand how you hit a ball to begin with. I really
hardest
don't
thing in the galaxy.
I really don't understand how you could possibly hit Aroldis Chapman.
No. He's at 101 and 102.
Every pitch is over 100, and then he threw a like what looked like a slider. It's hard because the velocities are so high, but what looked sort of like a slider for a strike. I mean, I just don't know how.
Okay. So here is a statistic, and I'm not that big on statistics, but here is one that you will like. In game one, when Aroldis Chapman came in, 10 of his pitches were clocked at 102. 10 of his pitches. The aggregate amount of pitches at 102 over the whole season by all major league pitchers was 10. Was 10.
Yeah.
So
Aroldis
Chapman in one night threw as many as everybody in a majors threw at 102.
I mean, I saw one at 104. I mean,
yeah,
it's
remarkable. By the way, did you say statistics or statistics?
Statistics.
I'm not like lefty.
Statistics. Statistics.
You had John Farrell as the manager of the Boston Red Sox in 2018, you were wrong. He is out.
Warner Wolf.
Yes. Despite winning a World Series and winning the division back-to-back times, which had never been done by a Red Sox manager, he did have 2 last place finishes, which probably didn't help him. And more importantly, just didn't really seem to click with Red Sox president Dave Dombrowski.
Well, that's it. He didn't hire him, and he came in, and he's fired him, and he's going to hire somebody else.
Yes. Now, he has already said that he would like to have somebody who has managerial experience, which would seem to eliminate one of the fan favorites of Jason Veritek, who is with the organization, but has never managed in
on
the
any level.
Can I throw a name out there?
Dusty Baker?
Matt Williams.
Oh, sure.
He has management experience.
That's right. He's out there.
Players love him.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, and staying in Boston, the season opens next week in the NBA, and the Celtics open in Cleveland. I don't know if you saw this remark from Kyrie Irving.
I did.
Yeah. Boston, and he says, I see a vast difference between the cities of Boston and Cleveland. Boston, I'm driving in, and I'm thinking, I'm really playing in a real live sports city. A lot of different cultures, food, and people. You get it all, especially in Boston. You would go to Cleveland, it would be at nighttime, and things would be going on, but you just see a vast difference.
Where is that game?
It's in Cleveland.
Oh,
in Cleveland.
Yeah. Oh,
that is,
boy.
He's going to get booed. That is balanced out by Isaiah Thomas saying, I love Boston, but I'll never speak to Danny Ainge again.
Now, Ainge said, I get that. I've been traded. I love that kid to death.
Yeah, it's fine.
But he totally understands. Okay. Staying with basketball, Andrew Wiggins signed a 5-year deal worth nearly $150 million.
He signed the same deal that Joel Embiid signed, and the difference is he actually plays in games.
Well,
Joel
yes.
Embiid has played 31 games in 3 seasons. Andrew Wiggins, and I had no idea about this, and I think this is why Wilbon and everybody else is picking Minnesota to be very good this year. Andrew Wiggins averaged 23.5 points a game last year.
Yes.
I have no consciousness of Andrew Wiggins other than the fact that Cleveland traded him for Kevin Love, which resulted in a championship and 3 different trips to the finals, and it's hard to argue. It's hard to argue because LeBron is there.
Yes.
So, yeah.
To the NFL, we remember the game with the Pittsburgh Steelers last weekend when Ben Roethlisberger threw 5 interceptions, including 2 pick sixes, and after the game made a comment, something to the effect of, maybe I don't have it anymore. Well, in a very
it's important to know that he made that comment.
Yes, he said that.
I may
stink.
Those words came out of his mouth. In a very surly interview session with the media yesterday, he basically said, when they said, well, you know, do you have confidence still in your game? He says, 2 Super Bowls, 100-some years, 300-some. I don't even know my own stats. I've been playing this game longer probably than you've been covering it. Asked how the team blocks out distractions, Roethlisberger said, by not doing interviews like this.
This is important.
He should have thrown in just once, I'll be fine, comma, believe me. That would sort of get it done.
That
when
would
you throw
be amazing.
Me, I found
believe
that when you throw believe me on
works.
The end.
He said, reporters can question me.
Nope.
I don't question myself.
Yep.
Yes, you did. You were the one who said you might not have it anymore. Reporters didn't say. This is the same Ben Roethlisberger who last year, after saying he was thinking about retiring and then he wasn't going to retire, said, well, I never said I was going to retire. Well, yes, you did. You're the one who brought it up. He is the biggest diva in all of the NFL, bigger than any wide receiver.
No.
All he wants is for people in that city and organization to just love him all the
time.
Someone
should ask him if he feels like he has anything to prove to Steven Strasburg.
Well,
I would like to see his.
Now, I love Strasburg now, emphasis on the now, but his comments, which we touched on post-game, were totally ridiculous. You guys made this story up. No,
yes,
we didn't.
Right.
The manager said he's not starting.
Right.
I just don't understand. I mean, these guys, it's just,
You
would think they learned it from someone who's president just to blame the media on everything.
It's why I particularly like, no matter what happens, when a person is interviewed, whatever they've gotten, they immediately look at somebody and go, you can't take this away from me. When
so
you go,
true.
Nobody wants to take it away.
You're
happy
it.
You got it.
Yeah.
You want it. Shut up. Okay, what else?
And what is likely a preview of a first-round matchup in the playoffs, the Pens and the Caps played last night, and the Pens beat the Caps, as they tend to do.
And what is a preview of the outcome.
But they usually beat them only in the playoffs.
We call that
the game in the regular season.
Going to visit Donald Trump bump.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the Pens beat the Caps
8th for
3-2.
Ovi scored again.
Yes, and a bloke named Hornquist, who I'm not overly familiar with, had a goal and an assist. So
Horatio Hornquist.
Is that Horatio?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fred,
so I know you're taking a keen eye on the standings in the Metropolitan Division, the old Met. Pittsburgh and Washington both tied with 5 points trailing. Is it the Nets, New Jersey? Is that their team?
Yeah.
The New Jersey team would be the Devils.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, they're in first
place.
They're in first place.
I haven't looked at the standings.
Really?
I'm stunned that it's
Could you
starting.
Name all the hockey conferences? I had no idea.
I can probably name that.
Could you name the Caps conference?
I can't name 5 coaches.
Is there a Pacific conference?
There is.
Yeah.
Well
yes.
done. Pacific, Central, Metropolitan, and Atlantic.
Those are it's normal except for Metropolitan. Guggenheim.
No more Norris.
Yes, the Guggenheim divisions. Yes.
All right. We're good?
I just had one more story.
Go ahead.
About Vladimir Putin.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, there is this thing going on where world leaders love to give him puppies.
Mm. And Why?
Yeah.
This is most recently.
What does he do with
him?
He
brought his dog
apparently
to
he
a
Angela
Merkel. He's outdoorsman. He loves dogs.
Loves dogs, yes. And the latest one was, and you're going to love this, from Turkmenistan. hold on, I've got to get his name correct. Gurbanguly But Dimmu Kamadov.
I thought you wanted to get it correct.
It's Kamadov.
Kamadov. I'm sorry. as he was meeting with the Russian leader, Putin, he said, "We have common friend. This is world's unique alibi dog. Today, because you always need good alibi, Putin. And today I brought this little alibi with me." And then he hoisted up a puppy, and he's actually holding a puppy. Yeah.
By the scruff of the neck.
By the scruff of the neck. The dog later died.
So, yes, and the dog's name is Verny, which in Russian means faithful. So that appears to be Turkmenistan's way of saying, we're on your team, always and forever. But yes, he's been given dogs by the Japanese. Everyone, to seem to appease him, gives him puppies. So okay. There you go.
Love fantastic.
Did he have a shirt on accepting the puppy?
No, of course not. No, and he was bending a frying pan. <last he did. laughs> Yes. See, here's a picture of him playing with a couple of his dogs. That's his
adorable
dog Buffy and Yumi.
Donald.
Buffy, is that Russian?
And that's I believe it is Russian for Buffy. And that's just him playing in his backyard. Isn't that lovely?
It's great radio.
We wish everybody could see it. It's fabulous on radio. We're going to get out of here. We'll come back with Old Guy Radio and Sally Jenkins. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is the prologue and first tune of Jesus Christ Superstar, which debuted 47 years ago.
Yes, 1971, October 12th, 1971.
46
years ago.
This was seemed sacrilege to many at the time. This is Andrew Lloyd Webber with his first collaborator, Tim Rice.
Yes, and Lloyd Webber said in 2012, "I hugely objected to the original New York production, which was probably the worst night of my life. It was a vulgar travesty." Now, the show went on to be nominated for 5 Tony Awards, including Best Score, but didn't win any. Lloyd Webber won a Drama Desk Award as Most Promising Composer, and Ben Vereen, who played Judas Iscariot, won a Theater World Award.
The breakout song from this was by Yvonne Elliman called "I Don't Know How to Love Him." Michael, obviously not born when this came out. You love this. You love the score on this.
I did. I petitioned my high school music director to put this show on my senior year, but the vocal range is just, it's impossible to get a full cast for this show.
From high school kids.
Yeah. So unsuccessful, your petition?
Unsuccessful. I'm still working on it.
Right. Also, what your mic's
trying to
on.
Silence me. My wife's favorite as well. Plays it constantly in the house to my
still,
children.
To this,
absolutely
well, that's
loves
that's
it.
That's great. Sally Jenkins joins us now. She has written 2 columns in the last week or so that I've particularly liked, and I wanted to talk about them. I'm going to start with the Cam Newton column. You torched Cam Newton, and I thought it was a brilliant column. Do you like the apology that he made?
Oh, I was just teasing him. Come on.
You torched him.
Do I like the apology? You know, I just found it. I found it the apology of a guy trying very, very hard to undo pretty significant commercial damage that he did to himself. You know, the interesting thing about Cam Newton is that he wants to be a really, really big deal. He wants to be a huge star. He's taught, right, Tony? He's talked over and over about how he wants to be a transcendent figure
constantly.
That's what the clothing is all about. So what he did to himself basically was offend, 45% of the NFL audience, which is what the viewing figures are for women these days. So it was really, really dumb from a commercial standpoint for a guy who wants to be a very big star. So I have to view his apology in that context.
So what is interesting to me about that is that Cam Newton, and you're 100% right, he thinks of himself as a demigod. And dresses the part and tries to stand the part and literally act the part. But he bristles when he gets any sort of criticism whatsoever. This time, coming back, even if it was written for him, to say, look, I just got hurt financially and I got hurt from fans, and this time I think I sort of get it. I'm wondering if you saw any of that. Do you think he learned anything?
I'm not sure he's teachable because he's so thin-skinned. You know, he's so thin-skinned, and he's had a lot of people talk to him. You know, look, Ron Rivera tried to tell him, in the entire run-up to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, look, that you have to deal with this. This sort of spotlight is what being a Super Bowl quarterback is all about. And instead, Cam Newton just really sulked his way through Super Bowl week and rolled his eyes and sighed heavily. And as it turned out, really couldn't handle the Denver Broncos heat on the field or the moment. So people have been trying to talk to him about this before, and I haven't seen any significant improvement in his, you know, look, he was as sullen that day and went into, you know, his little demeaning smirk. You know, that was part and parcel of his behavior in public in general over the last couple of years. I just am not a big believer that that gets you very far. And he hasn't shown any sign of adjusting to the fact that if you want to be a really, really big star, people are going to scrutinize you and watch you and ask you questions about what you're doing.
I think he's a great talent. I really do. He's just
gigantic talent. He's electrifying.
Great. Just great. Okay. The second column, and it's a much harder column to write, and that is about the protests that are going on now, that every day there is more news about the protests. It seems obvious that Roger Goodell finally understands that this is far bigger than he thought it was, and it is inflamed every day by Donald Trump, every single day. You see something understandable on both sides, right?
You know, it's amazing how you write a column that you think is the most moderate thing you've ever written, and people on both sides go crazy.
That's good. Then you've done it well. Yeah.
You know, Dan Baltz, who's our great, you know, award-winning political writer, he told me once that's right where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, look, there is another side to this. There are millions of people who view whatever you do during the national anthem, other than standing, you know, up straight with your hand over your heart, as an offense against the people who serve. You know, here's the problem with, look, I defend the NFL. I defend taking the knee, right? I think it's an interesting campaign. I like what they're doing. I appreciate, you know, we ask athletes to be activists right up until they say something that makes us uncomfortable. So I've actually liked the whole campaign and defend their right to do it. I think it's really interesting. The problem is that for the moment that they choose, which is the anthem, that there's an inherent statement there that says what we are doing for these 2 minutes is more important than this anthem and this flag. And that flag has draped coffins. And those playings of the anthem are a lot of them paid for by the Department of Defense. And there's a statement before they play them, you know, let's think for a couple of minutes about our servicemen and women. And so when you choose that moment to take the knee, what you are saying is, you know, the knee I am taking and the cause I want to talk about or make you think about right now is necessarily coming at a moment where I'm going to take attention away from people who serve. That is incredibly, incredibly inflaming to an awful lot of people, and it's just not good enough for the take a knee group to say, well, that's not what we mean.
Well, we talked about this. Mike and I talked about this on television yesterday, and I said, look, there are millions and millions of people who look at this as, you know, anti the flag, anti the country, anti the military, anti law enforcement, and they are just not going to listen when somebody says, oh, I don't mean it that way.
It's naive to say and think we're all supposed to just accept, well, I don't mean it that way. It's not about racial injustice. Sorry, you're choosing the flag as your moment to do it. So you have to tell your audience, you have to talk to your audience about it in a different way if you really want the dialogue that you say that you want. And I know that they want the dialogue. Look, these are great, smart guys. I mean, Kenny Britt, you know, his sister serves in the military, okay? You know, there's a lot of these guys who are taking a knee, you know, have relatives, as I tried to point out in the column, if anybody read that far. You know, there's over 100 guys in the NFL who have, you know, are directly related to the military, who have parents who were in the Marine Corps or the Navy, or, you know, Ron Rivera's father is a military guy. John Fox's father was a Navy SEAL. You know, there's deep relationships between NFL people and the military, and that's not just, you know, paid for advertising by the military. It's real. You know, they feel it and they respect it. But it's naive and not especially productive in the discussion to say, well, that's not what we mean. We don't mean to disrespect the flag. It's inherent when you take that knee to a lot of people that you're saying for 2 minutes, my point is more important than yours.
We can all agree on this, that social protest is messy. It's not conciliatory. It's picked for a very specific reason. It's picked to be as provocative as it can be. And I find There was a comment by somebody yesterday about a pink ribbon isn't going to cure this. Because a lot of people in the NFL are saying, well, why don't we just have Social Awareness Month in the way that they have Breast Cancer Awareness Month? And I don't know, Sally. I mean, I look at this, what's going on now in the NFL, and will probably spread to some degree to other sports. I don't think an awareness month, I don't think the NFL is going to be able to buy these players off that easily, and I don't think the players are going to trust Roger Goodell, and I wonder what you think.
I don't think the players trust Roger Goodell at all. I will say this. I think Goodell has done a better job with this than he has with most things.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
By a long shot. And maybe that's Joe Lockhart's influence. I think it probably is. But well, here's what I really think. I think the Haslams in Cleveland got it right. You know, owners, this is an ownership issue. Goodell ultimately is only, you know, the errand boy of the owners. And so the problem here is, can you get a consensus among these owners who can then go to their players and get a consensus from them in turn? And one of the things we're seeing is the dynamic. It's much easier to get a consensus among, you know, 31 owners and the Green Bay Packers than it is to get a consensus in a locker room among players, you know, who are incredibly a very, very, very diverse group. And so the communication between the league to the owners to the players, that's an awful lot of consensus that they're trying to form, and I don't think it's realistic. I think you're going to have different teams doing different things, and I don't think there's any way around that.
What did the Haslams do with Cleveland? What did they do?
So here's what the Haslams did, which made a lot of sense. The Haslams understood that they had a real large group of players. I think it's at least a dozen of the Cleveland Browns who were taking a knee. Then they had the Cleveland cops saying, well, we're going to boycott your games. We're not going to carry the colors at the stadium, and so on and so forth. So the Haslams came in and actually asked players to sit down with police. They got everybody in a room and had them all talk about all the stuff you and me have been talking about for the last 10 minutes. And it worked. They actually ended up arriving at this sort of compromise deal where they got the Cleveland police back on board with their players, and they got their players to understand, you know, here are the sorts of feelings you're offending. And they wound up working together to do something on the field that everyone could live with. So I just think it's going to be town to town. And I think it's, while the NFL wants to forge this kind of consensus, you're going to have a different deal in Dallas than you're going to have in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Roger Goodell came out with a statement the other day because he feared that Jerry Jones had gone rogue and that and he had no control over the league anymore. He had none. Zero.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, Jed York in San Francisco is facing a different audience and a different sensibility than Jerry Jones in Dallas, where you've got Carswell Air Force Base and you know, you've got a heavy, heavy, heavy military involvement in Dallas, among other things. You've got a guy on staff in Rod Marinelli who fought in Vietnam, by the way, which everybody has forgotten. So, you know, every team is facing a different audience and a different sensibility and a different, you know, maybe potentially different chemistry in their locker room. You know, you've got the 49ers are very, very loyal to Colin Kaepernick, and so is Jed York, apparently. Jed York has said, from what I've heard, he's not going to force anyone to do anything in his locker room.
Why doesn't he just bring Colin Kaepernick back and sit him on the bench in an active, you know, role?
Yeah, that's the interesting question. You know, and of course, look, here's the other deal. You have to be real careful if you're an owner that you don't touch off a race war in your locker room.
Exactly.
It is very dicey. When you have the president and the vice president of the United States essentially telling a lot of young black men, shut up and sing, that's a tough moment. I mean, it really is. I don't care. You know, Trump and Pence can say, well, we don't mean it that way. But you know what? There's a real large audience that takes it that way.
You hear what you want to hear, and you see what you want to see, and that's I don't think anyone is prepared for where this is going, because I don't think anyone knows where it's going. Thanks, Sal.
Thank you, Tony.
Appreciate it. See you soon, I hope.
Okay.
Sally Jenkins, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with emails and jingles. Right? I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the ZipRecruiter ad. In need of great talent for your business but short on time? You don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools. You need smarter tools. What if hiring could be easier, more streamlined, less time consuming? So even when you're busy, you could still be smart, not dumb, smart about the way you hire. If you're hiring, you know that quality hires keep your business moving forward. But you also know it can take a lot of time to find the right candidate for the job. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Okay, here's what you do. You go to ZipRecruiter. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing that your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter is obviously the smartest way to hire. I'm glad I'm not hiring, because I wouldn't know how to do it. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners to this high-quality pod can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. ZipRecruiter. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Can't see the damn moon rising. Can't see the waxing moon today. Can't see the moon and it is frightening. Who hid my daily lunar display? Well, the moon's gonna see him tonight, and Satsmo's wondering why. Can't see the damn moon in the sky.
Steve Lipton, Springfield, Virginia. We solved that problem. The moon was rising, or whatever it was doing. It was hours different in a two-day period. Hours
different. It was waxing.
Which I didn't really understand. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thank you to Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday and to Sally Jenkins of the Washington Post for coming on the show. I'd like to thank our sponsors today, Blue Apron, SeatGeek, and ZipRecruiter. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. And remember, Chatter will be open tonight to serve you. Nats game, what is it, 8 o'clock?
8:08.
8:08.
Flying the flag, which I love.
Yes, I just got saw that.
The socialite and I got that flag.
Looks awesome.
We got that so the people would identify this as a Nats bar. And we have a Maryland flag.
Watch here, because Metro's going to close down at the stadium.
Is that right?
Yeah.
11:30.
Are you serious?
The learners should pay for that.
They should indeed.
They should pay for that. That's from ridiculous. Dennis McCann in Bayfield, Wisconsin. Like, just
spending learners' money.
They should. Just wanted you to know that earlier today I made a hole-in-one on a par 3 course at Wisconsin's fabulous new Sand Valley after playing a preview round of the new Mammoth Dunes course. I've been playing golf for more than 50 years, my first ace. You may be wondering why I'm telling you. Don't feel special, like the 80-year-old said after making love to the showgirl. I'm telling everybody. From James O'Neill, I went through the obits in the post. I didn't see one for Steven Strasburg this morning. I am confused. He was murdered by Barry in print, and the at failing Washington Post refuses to honor him with an obituary. Hashtag sad. From Mike Rosenberry in State College, Pennsylvania. I can't wait to hear Wilbon's harangue on Chicago mold. This will boil down to two salient points. One, Chicago mold has evolved over the years of harsh winters and beautiful summers to be as robust and toxic as the bubonic plague. And Chicagoans, due to their hardy constitutions brought on by said harsh winters, their ability to embrace all local sports teams equally at the same time, and just their Midwestern can-do attitudes, are able to brush this mold aside as if it were a callow Northeast prep school youth attempting to accost them in the street. Woe to any East Coaster that encounters the mold of doom. That's a fabulous
good
email.
One.
Fabulous. From Rebecca Snyder, please wish a happy 33rd birthday to Wes Tagliaferri. From Rochester, New York, and the last name is pronounced Taglafair, so I got that wrong. Sincerely, the woman to whom he's related by marriage. So I got it wrong because I was reading line by line instead of reading all of it at once.
Which is always great at the end when they say, please don't read my name on the air.
From Jason in Hilton Head, South Carolina. I guess the moldy orchid got some Natty Bow medicine, cures any brittle aces pitcher's illness, hon. Looking forward to Chicago Mold SVU introducing Lace as the pesky know-it-all private school headmaster run amok.
No problem.
From Mike Mackler in Wilmington, Delaware. Something I whipped up today. Claire suggested I mail it to you. The hot new show coming to NBC this fall. And this is, of course, Chicago Mold. We have we have that. From Franklin Huff in Niles, Michigan. Michael A. Taylor. What a shot. I can say that. Ruffin Bailey, Charleston, South Carolina. The Orchid Blooms. That's it. That's all I got. And he did.
Yeah.
He was
yeah.
great. He was just great.
Beyond great.
From Chris in Falls Church. Dear Dr. Porthauser, Orchid, 75 degrees and sunny. Can I interest you in 7 shutout innings and 12 strikeouts against one of the best teams in baseball? Well, how about 7 shutout innings and 12 strikeouts against one of the best teams in baseball in the playoffs, on the road, in the rain? Love your show, but this is one case where you and I are both going to have to concede. Happily, I add parenthetically that Boz was right. Yes.
You ate it.
Boz
yeah.
was
yeah.
right.
First
I read
thing,
it.
You ate it.
Boz
that.
Was
yeah.
right. Ernie in Central Pennsylvania, I guess the I guess I think he's from Pennsylvania and Kentucky.
I guess.
This is Lexus Direction Assistance. We require a few more pieces of information to complete your subscription renewal. Please provide your credit card number, social security number, mother's maiden name, and Bootsy's social security number. We're tuned in, so go ahead and read them on the air. We will hang up and listen. From John Halverstadt in Worthington, Ohio. Please read this for us Indians fans. Miller Kluber shelled Yankee 15 pitch at bats. God must hate Cleveland. Thanks. And from Alex Lau in New York City, the Orchid, also known as the Mold Plant, comes through. Michael A. Taylor comes through. I was just waiting for Ovi and John Wall to come in and hit a home run or strike someone out so it could be proved Mr. Tony wrong night. No. What do we got here? Oh, we have, okay, we have a haiku from Shad. Forget the illness, forget the mold, the AC. Winning cleanses all. That's true. He was great.
God. I mean, see it tonight. Great.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Please.
You got to win tonight.
Tomorrow.
You have to win tonight.
It's a tree falling in the woods right now.
You have to win tonight. If you don't, none of that matters. The Hop home run, Strasburg being brilliant last night.
Zimmerman home run.
Yeah, Zimmerman. All of that is
Taylor
forgotten.
Home run.
You have to win this game.
Well, make sure you're here tomorrow if they don't win tonight.
Absolutely.
Where else am I going?
Radio.
I'll be here. If you're out on your bike, kind everyone as always. Do wear white.
Come on, man. What are we doing out there, man?
I disappear in the distance. They didn't stack up. You weren't there.